From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at Carnegie Hall in New York City, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. I feel the same way. It is pretty great to be back here in New York in Carnegie Hall. We have got a great show for you today. The Honorable Michael Bloomberg, Mayor of New York City, will be by later to answer our questions. By the way, in honor of Mayor Bloomberg, who, as you know, is a media billionaire, we're going to institute a new feature for the first time at our Not My Job game. It's called, you know, you actually can buy a clue. But your call to us is still free. It's 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant to this week's show. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Amber Merchant in Tucson, Arizona.
Tucson, one of the more beautiful places in the country. What do you do there, Amber?
I work for the local nonprofit Catholic healthcare network, Rosalette.
Really? So you're part of the great Vatican conspiracy to make people healthy.
I like to think that that's the Pope's ultimate goal, but you never know.
You never know. Well, good for you. Well, welcome to our show. Let me introduce you to our panel this week on stage at Carnegie Hall. First, say hello to a writer for Boston Globe magazine and author of the new book, Idiot America, Mr. Charlie Pierce.
Hello, Amber.
Next is one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column, Ms. Roxanne Roberts.
Hey, Amber.
Finally, an author and humorist whose audiobook, It's Just Like I Told You, 25 Years of Comments and Comic Pieces, is available at iTunes and Audible.com. I mean, Mr. Tom Beaudet.
Hi, Amber.
Amber, you're going to start us off with a round of Who's Carl This Time. Of course, Carl Castle will now read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you'll win our prize. Carl Castle's voice on your home answering machine. You ready to go?
Yes, I am.
All right, here is your first quote.
This is not about deterring people from traveling. We're just suggesting that perhaps they shouldn't linger.
That was the United States Undersecretary of State speaking at All Things Considered. He was letting us all know in the vaguest possible terms that we might want to be careful if we go where?
Europe?
Yes, Europe. Very good. Here she goes. The State Department has issued a travel warning for Europe, but won't tell us what it is or even that we shouldn't go. It's like they've swapped Obama's soft diplomacy for a new strategy, passive-aggressive diplomacy. Oh, you're going to Europe. Okay, if that's what you want. No, go. I'm sure it'll be fine. Fine. No, go. In essence, the State Department is telling us to go to Europe, but don't do anything people do in Europe, like visit popular museums or tourist attractions, or, we love this, go to airports or train stations. Great. Well, you know, we had this tour of Tuscany planned. We'll just do it by swinging from tree to tree. That will be fine. And they're pointing out there are safer alternatives to the big tourist sites. You know, forget the Hunchback of Notre Dame. Here's Alice at the flower shop with a lazy eye. She's very colorful.
Yes, yeah, so there's always the leaning Applebee's of Pisa.
Exactly.
Which I really love.
Is the issue lingering? Is that the problem? If you went really, really fast?
If you did the Louvre in like 10 minutes.
10 minutes, exactly.
Exactly.
Bonjour, monsieur. We have the audio tour and we have the roller skates.
You can, by the way, you can still go to Euro Disney because even Al-Qaeda doesn't want to go there. Come on. All right, very good, Amber. Here is your next quote.
How dare you come and greet me after what you did in Barcelona?
That was what author Mario Vargas Llosa said to another famous author right before socking him in the eye 30 years ago. This week, Vargas Llosa was either forgiven or rewarded for that act when he won what?
The Nobel Prize?
Yes, the Nobel Prize for Literature. Very good. Vargas Llosa punched famed author Gabriel Garcia Marquez in the face because, biographers say, Marquez had, quote, consoled Vargas Llosa's wife when Vargas Llosa wasn't around.
Was she particularly unhappy?
She was. We assume she needed consoling because nobody was lying on top of her at the time. Made her sad. The award comes, this one, which came on Thursday, came after they gave the physics award to two Russians who had spent their time doing things like levitating frogs and using scotch tape in their experiments. That's true. So the Nobel Prizes are becoming like the VMAs. It's all about scandal and characters. They'll have fashion reporters outside the ceremony in Oslo saying things like, well, that's a very nice blazer. Whose elbow patches are you wearing? And then just when they give, like, Vargas Llosa his literature award, Gabriel Garcia Marquez, who's also a laureate, of course, he's going to jump up on the podium and say, I'm going to let you finish. But Cormac McCarthy wrote the best novel of all time. It just occurred to me, you know, half our audience isn't going to know who Cormac McCarthy is, and half of them have no idea what I'm talking about in the first place. So.
Oh. The older I get, the faster the sun sets on my Nobel ambitions.
So. Really?
Unless they start giving out a Nobel Prize in woodshop, I think that...
Yeah. Amber, your last quote is from Alessandra Stanley, the New York Times, giving her review of a new cable news show that debuted this week.
The ickiness factor may subside.
So what new show has an ickiness factor?
Something to do with hoarding?
Something to do with hoarding.
No, they got rid of this one pretty quick.
No. Sticking around.
Drop the D.
Oh. I don't want to pressure you on this because not watching cable news, I think, is a sign of virtue in these times. But you have no idea what the show was?
I have no clue. Yeah,
New show. It's Parker Spitzer. Parker Spitzer. It's hosted, of course, by columnist Kathleen Parker and former New York Governor Elliot Spitzer. CNN, it's been hard for them. They've been pummeled by the opinion shows on MSNBC and Fox and primetime. So they decided to hire two smart, opinionated people to really hash out the important issues in an intelligent style. It's sort of like all things except that prostitution scandal considered. The best part of the whole thing was this segment they've created for the show called Guilty Pleasures, where the hosts and their guests go around and they say, my guilty pleasure is. And we all watched, we were like, okay, Elliot Spitzer, let's go. And Elliot Spitzer says, well, my guilty pleasure is NASCAR. NASCAR, he said.
Well, that, whom that, among us?
Yeah,
not
whom, yeah. That's why he resigned. I don't remember it that way. Actually, if you pay as much money for NASCAR as you do for his real guilty pleasure, you actually get to drive the car. So.
Did you watch it?
I did watch parts of it.
Yes.
And it's not bad. I mean, Elliot Spitzer is a very smart man who's been involved in public issues his whole life. He's very personable. Kathleen Parker, Pulitzer Prize-winning conservative columnist. Again, tremendously accomplished person. But it's weird. It's like you have Elliot Spitzer on a show, and the only reason anybody cares about Elliot Spitzer these days is because of his huge scandal that we all learned about him. It's like, what a waste. It's like hiring Pamela Anderson to read to the blind. It's like... Use your assets, CNN.
What would you have him do?
Well, that's a good question.
That's a fair point, yeah.
Carl, how did Amber do in our quiz?
Well, Amber had two correct answers, Peter, and that's enough to win our prize.
Well done, Amber.
Yay!
Cry of glee. Good for you. Thank you so much for playing, Amber.
Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye. Right now, panel, it's time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Roxanne, Halloween is coming up, and of course, you're probably thinking about your costume. You could pick from the classics, the sexy French maid, the sexy nurse, the sexy former half-term governor. But this year, one costume company is offering costumes that purport to make you look like a sexy character from what?
Oh, I am going to need a hint. Congress. No.
Oh, Lord.
Barbara Mikulski, come on down.
Right. That'd be kind of awesome.
I have a hint, but I apologize to everyone, especially the ghosts of Carnegie Hall. I'm going to have to sing it. Sunny day, chasing the clouds away.
A sexy Sesame Street character?
Yes, indeed. Name the least sexy street in America. No, not the one in not the one in front of John Edwards' sad little apartment. We mean Sesame Street. This promises to be the first Halloween brought to you by the letter X. So you can go as Tickle This Elmo.
Are you serious?
Mr. Sluttalophagus. In Big Bird, still be known as Big Bird, but when you say Big Bird, you kind of wink.
And Oscar is not grouchy anymore. In fact, he's very happy.
He is. Thank you so much. It is time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, everyone. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Jacob Sully from Bellingham, Washington.
Hey, how are things in Bellingham?
A little gray today, but not too bad.
That's why people here live in New York, to stay away from the bad weather. In fact, I don't know if you've heard this, Mayor Bloomberg paid for a dome. Well, welcome to the show, Jacob. You are going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Jacob's topic?
Single, white, avuncular newscaster type with authoritative voice seeks same.
For what, Carl? I there's no shortage of ways to meet people in the modern era. There's eHarmony, there's Craigslist. But this week we read a story about a surprising new way to quickly find your true soulmate. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about an innovative twist in the dating scene. Choose that true story, you'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
First, let's hear from Roxanne Roberts.
All those dating sites that promise someone with 39 points of compatibility? Compatible, sure, but boring, says D.C. political consultant Dylan Copeland, who has a new spin on the old adage that opposites attract. Really opposite. His new venture, HateDate.com, matches couples who on paper should loathe each other. Conservatives and liberals, Christians and atheists, butchers and PETA members, Yankees and Red Sox fans. The idea, Copeland told the Huffington Post, is that two passionate people bring excitement, energy, and sex appeal to their relationships. And he's hired Democrat James Carville and Republican Mary Matlin, whose 17-year-old union still has plenty of sparks, as celebrity spokespeople. Quote, think about it. Every romantic comedy starts out with two people who can't stand each other, said Copeland. Couples like this spend a lifetime arguing, but the makeup sex is amazing.
Opposites attract, or so they hope, at HateDate.com. Your next story of a new way to meet someone comes from Tom Baudet.
When you hear the term weed dating, you picture perhaps two giggling lovebirds plowing through a bag of Doritos in front of late-night TV. But that is not at all what weed dating organizers at Tunbridge Hill Farm in Vermont are up to. Weed dating is a variation on speed dating, where people pair up in bars for a few minutes and then move on to the next table. Weed dating takes place on farms among rows of sprouting produce. Participants weed a row with a potential romantic interest, then at the sound of a goat's bell, move on to another row and another partner. Everyone wears a tag bearing her name along with the name of a favorite fruit or vegetable, explained organizer Sarah Kale Husner. It isn't only about love and dating, she said, indicating that weed dating will prove to be every bit as awkward and futile as its speedy city cousin. The focus is on finding people who share the same interests and values. And, it might be pointed out here, the host's fields get weeded. Eager weed dater Ben Wolf of North Turnbridge allows that it says something about people that they'd like to do something like this. Probably nothing a good conversation wouldn't overcome, and you never know what will happen on a farm where second date entertainment could include detasseling corn or even checking one another for ticks.
All right, weed dating from Tom Bodep. Work in the fields, we're looking for love. Your last story of a twist in the dating scene comes from Charlie Pierce.
In an attempt to build a new revenue stream for their troubled racetrack, officials at Mountain Meadow Downs in Portage, Wisconsin, have opened a new service for their regular customers, matchmaking. Romantic railbirds are encouraged to supply details about their family backgrounds and their hobbies and interests to a stewards committee, which will then match them up using roughly the same principles used in breeding thoroughbred horses. Once the couples are matched up, other patrons will be allowed to wager on which one of them will wind up at the altar based on their pedigree and past performance charts. Win, place, and show betting will consist of a show bet, meaning a second date, a place bet, meaning an engagement, and a win bet being the walk down the aisle. The program had its first winners this week. Mark and Wanda Weishoppel were joined in holy wedlock, and the happy couple paid $580, $340, and $290.
All right. Here, then, are your choices from Roxanne Roberts, HateDate.com, a service that matches people with their ideological and personality-wise opposite, from Tom Bodette, Weed Dating, where couples spend a few moments together getting to know each other while, well, weeding a farm, or from Charlie Pierce, a dating program at a racetrack where punters get to bet on the outcome. Which of these is the real story of a new innovation on coupling up?
I think I'm going to have to go with weed dating. I do love gardening, so.
You do like gardening, so you think weed dating, Tom's story of the dating service at a farm in Vermont, is the actual one. All right, well, we actually spoke to the person who came up with this innovative new way to meet cute.
We came up with the idea of weed dating as a way to bring people to the farm. You know, after you weed a bed with somebody, there's no pretending. You pretty much get to know them pretty well.
That was Wendy Palti. She is a farmer at Tunbridge Hill Farm in Vermont. She came up with weed dating. Congratulations, Jacob. You got the right answer. Well done.
Thanks a lot.
And now the game where we invite extremely powerful people onto our show and make them do something completely unimportant. It's a waste of their time, but we enjoy it. We call it Not My Job. Mayor Michael Bloomberg loves New York City. He loves New York City so much, in fact, that he has so far refused to give it back. Now in his third term as mayor of this great city, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, welcome to Wait, Wait, Talk, Tell Me.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you with us. So you're the mayor of this city. We're so excited to get to talk to you. So much we want to ask you first. Can you do anything about the car alarm that's going off in front of our hotel every night at 3 a.m.?
No.
You don't have that power?
No.
We wonder about that because this is a city of, shall we say, outspoken people. Do people come up to you and say, Mayor Bloomberg, you got to help me out because there's a sewer, there's a pothole, there's a this, there's a that.
Well, it's New York, so they ask for things. In the morning on the subway, only once has somebody screamed at me. As the door closed, the guy looked at me and said, fix the Knicks. Even God can't do that.
Not really. Wait a minute. You take the subway to work?
Every day.
Really?
Yep.
And have you had... Because, you know, I know this is New York.
But I get it for half price because I've got a senior's Metro card.
There you go. How in the world, I mean, you've lived in New York for a long time, right? Your whole life, pretty much. How in the world can anyone spend so much time in New York, do so much business here, and look around and imagine that anybody could tell any of these people what to do?
Well, I tell them, and they don't listen, and we're both happy.
Really?
But they do pay me.
They do.
They pay me a dollar a year.
We know that. They pay you a dollar a year. Obviously, you're not hurting when it comes to the income. But we wanted to ask you, do you actually get the dollar a year? Is there a little ceremony?
No, I get a check for 93 cents because they take out Social Security.
Do they really?
And I've always had this fantasy of our commissioner for finance at the end of the year trying to balance the city's checkbook. And he can't find where the 93 cents went.
Because you're not cashing the checks?
I've got them all framed.
Really? Because we thought you'd be saving up for something nice when you retire.
Like what, a Milky Way bar?
No, like, right. You know, like a Knish, maybe. Right. They have those here.
Not for 93 cents, though.
No, apparently not. Apparently not. One of the hallmarks of your terms as mayor is you really, shall we say, looked after the better interests of New Yorkers, whether they wanted you to or not. You've got the trans fat ban, the smoking ban. Yeah. They apparently that's popular. I mean, and recently you've had a campaigns against sugary soda. Don't you realize that pretty much everybody in New York already has a Jewish mother? Do they need another?
Yeah, sure they need another one, because their Jewish mother's sitting at home, feet up, listening to your radio show.
Right. But doesn't it go against the image of New York? Because New York is tough. New York is a place where people take risks and do crazy things.
Yeah,
and
we do that. We do that, but we also live 1 year and 7 months more now than we did 8 years ago.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, if that doesn't make you happy, I don't know what I can do for you.
I know, but you can't extend the life of New Yorkers. They can't afford the extra rent. Yeah, I'd live another 2 years, but where am I going to get the money? I mean, it's honestly a graveyard. Actually, I'm sure there are people who already moved into their cemetery plots because, you know, it's a good deal. And in New York, you don't stay in your apartment anyway. We were talking about money a little while ago, and you've already mentioned that you take the subway to work, which is great. You once told Time Out New York, and I quote you, "If God told me I was going to die tomorrow, I would have white toast burnt with a quarter inch of Skippy Super Chunk melted on it, and then slices of overripe banana and burnt crisp bacon in a sandwich," unquote.
Yep.
So our question is, Mayor Bloomberg, you are aware you are a billionaire. Is this not true? True? That's it.
Well, my 101-year-old mother eats peanut butter sandwiches every day. It must work.
You have a 101-year-old mother?
Yeah.
You have a 101-year-old, I'm going to assume something here, a 101-year-old Jewish mother?
Yes.
You're a billionaire. You're the mayor of New York City. Is she still vaguely disappointed in you? She's like, Mikey, you know, your third term is up. It's not too late for medical school if you're looking around.
There's always hope.
You spent a lot of money in your campaign. Somebody once calculated one of your elections at $90 a vote. Was it worth it? Was it, you know, all the tourists you get from everybody?
Well, if I could have done it for less, I would have. As JFK's father said, all he wanted to do was buy the election, not a landslide.
Yeah. It's terrible that a man of your background and business acumen had to buy the mayoralty retail. It seems unfair. I do want to ask you, though, I mean, you are coming to the end of your third term. I don't think even, I assume there's no plan to change it again so you can have a fourth?
No, there's 1,181 days left to go, but who's counting?
Exactly. Are you counting them like, oh, only 1,181? I can't stand that it's so short. All I have to do is get through these and then I'll be free.
No, I get up every day and I like what I do.
Is there anything you've wanted to say to the people of New York that you have not been able to?
No.
That you now can?
I was a wise ass at 26, and, you know, at 68, it's the same thing.
Really?
Yeah.
They've been pretty much getting that from you all along.
Yeah.
Really? When you're out of office, what do you want people to say about you? Mike Bloomberg, that guy, he, what?
Handsome.
That was a good-looking guy. Tall, too.
Absolutely.
Well, Mayor Bloomberg, we are thrilled to have you here with us at Carnegie Hall, this jewel in your city, and we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
I'm your king, and I quit.
Since you've shown if there's one thing you won't do, it's leave your job, we thought we'd ask you three questions about the most famous quitter of the 20th century, the Duke of Windsor, who reigned very briefly in 1936 as King Edward VIII of England. If you answer two questions about the king and future duke correctly, you will win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's Voice, in their home voicemail. Are you ready to play?
I am ready.
All right. Who is the mayor of New York City playing for, Carl?
The mayor is playing for Steve Searle of New York City.
Yeah. All right. Ready to play?
Yep.
Here we go. Even before he abdicated his throne, King Edward proved himself to be a rather odd monarch. Among the decrees of his first and only year as king were which of these? A, that his portrait on the coins be turned around from right to left profile so that people could see the part in his hair. B, that the pug dog, beloved of kings, be officially known in Great Britain as the Royal Hound of Favor. Or C, that Coca-Cola be banned from the United Kingdom in favor of Royal Crown Cola.
I guess, can you give me any hints?
You think I'm going to give you a hint? Do you think Michael Bloomberg needs a hint?
Well, you got to get out of town.
That's true.
I guess I'd go with A.
You're going to go with A, that his portrait should be turned around?
Yeah.
You were correct, sir. That's exactly right. Tradition holds that each new royal coin shows the monarch facing the opposite way of his predecessor, but Edward was vain about the part in his hair, so he insisted that he be seen facing the left, like his father.
I knew that.
I know you know it now. All right, next question. Edward abdicated the throne, of course, when he proposed to Mrs. Wallace Simpson, the woman he loved, a divorcee who was known to get around. In fact, while the future king was courting her, causing scandal and dismay, she was still seeing whom on the side. Was it A, Winston Churchill, B, a Ford salesman, or C, her husband's golf instructor?
Well, I wish to be a golfer, so I'm going to go with C.
Sadly, it was the Ford salesman.
Really?
Yeah, apparently he was a very charming, handsome Ford salesman. But Mrs. Simpson was carrying on with him while she was carrying on with the Prince of Wales.
I didn't know Ford sold in England.
They did. Oh, yes.
Right. Henry got around.
He did. All right, this is very exciting. This is coming down, as we say, to the last inning here, because if you get this one right, you will win it all. So Edward gave up the throne, as we know. He abdicated, became the Duke of Windsor. His brother George became King George the VI. How did Edward spend the first months of his post-monarchy? A, enjoying walking into shops and saying, "Hello, I'm Ed." B, calling up his brother the king every day and begging for money. Or C, trying to auction off the furnishings of Balmoral Castle.
Tricky.
Yes.
They don't auction off the furniture of Balmoral Castle, do they?
No.
I don't think so. Probably calling his brother and calling asking for a buck or two.
Yes, you're right.
Thank you.
You are. He called the king every day, asking for money, until the king asked to have the calls not put through. Carl, how did Mayor Bloomberg do in our quiz?
Mayor Bloomberg had 2 correct answers, Peter, and that was enough to win for Steve Searle.
Very good. Steve Searle's here. He's excited. He likes you more than he did. Steve,
we do charge sales tax on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Michael Bloomberg is the mayor of New York in his 3rd term. Thank you so much for being here, Mayor Bloomberg.
It's
an honor to be here and in your city. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, everybody. In just a minute, Carl will grab his guitar and start his career as the naked limericist in Rhyme Square. It's the Listener Limerick Challenge. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Roxanne, CNBC's Larry Kudlow warned this week that President Obama was projecting an image of weakness to the world, that he was giving strength to our enemies, and that he lowered the dignity of his office. When he did what to Rahm Emanuel last week?
Not half enough.
All right, so he hugged him?
Yes, he hugged him.
That was
the problem.
At the resignation, right?
Yes. At the departure ceremony. In a strongly worded column we nearly finished reading. Mr. Kudlow said, quote, "The hug at the farewell ceremony lacked dignity. It did not send a message of American power and forcefulness. I fret about the reaction around the world," unquote. So do we. Our enemies are like, hey, CNBC is hiring idiots who worry about hugs. I think we can take these guys. The president, though, the president should know that there are ways for a man to project strength while hugging. Traditionally, you can do like the handshake into hug move, that old A-frame, keeping your lower torsos at a safe heterosexual distance. Or you can give the classic one-armed hug, freeing the other arm to fire an AK-47 into the air. That projects strength. But you know, the president, they're getting more sensitive to their criticisms as we get up to the midterms. So this week, on Wednesday, he said farewell to a longtime advisor by hitting him on the head with a pipe. Charlie, the president of Bolivia, Evo Morales, is a man of the people. And as such, he took to the soccer field to play a hard-fought game with a club team in La Paz, and he showed he cared about soccer as much as anyone when he did what in the middle of the match?
Took out a tennis racket.
I don't play by your rules. No,
that'd I'm be the great. President.
Yeah, no, not that.
Well, I mean, what, did you take off a shirt? Did you do one of those celebration deals?
No. I don't know much about soccer. I don't. But I do not think these are the balls you're supposed to kick.
He went upside the downside on one of the opponents?
Yes, he did.
Excellent.
He kneed an opponent in the groin really hard. The president's team...
Now, if he had done that to Rahm Emanuel...
There you are. The president's... we're speaking, of course, of the president of Bolivia, Evo Morales. His team took on a team captained by the mayor of La Paz, and which would have been a friendly match, but in retaliation for a hard tackle, the president was caught on video going up to his opponent, far away from where the ball was, you know, and he sort of just grabs the guy by the shoulders, and he rears back and just nails him right in the central highlands. But later on, the mayor was like, so I've got good news and bad news. Good news is I can tell my children I met the president. Bad news, not having children.
Who won the game?
Who cares?
I care.
I appreciate that.
I mean, if the mayor's team won, wouldn't that be kind of, you know, vindication?
They'd be thrilled.
But later in the game, by the way, the president did score a goal, I think, because everyone was afraid to go anywhere near him. Roxanne, an organization known as the Olealia Group, is working with the nation of Maldives to take over one of their islands and turn it into a resort. You know, like Disney World or Sandals, there'll be entertainment, there'll be golf courses, spas. But it will have one very clear distinction. What?
I haven't a clue. I'm going to need a hint.
As the saying goes, they will have more fun. It's part of the contract.
Who has more fun?
Who has more fun? Blondes. Blondes.
Blondes. Everybody will be blonde. It'll be a blonde-only resort. Everybody who staffs it will
That's
be blonde.
Totally discrimination.
The so-called Island of Blondes is what it would be called. It's the dream of Giedra Pukiene. She is the leader.
I thought that was Iceland.
No. Oh. This is a commercial enterprise. Giedra Pukiene is the leader of the Lithuanian Blonde Movement.
Oh,
in other news, there is a Lithuanian Blonde Movement. What is the Lithuanian Blonde Movement lobby against? Big words? I don't know. Ms. Pukiene says her goal is to show, quote, blondes are a great power that should not be underestimated. We are smart, beautiful, reckless, and purposeful, unquote.
So let me see if I understand this right. All the employees are going to be blonde?
All the employees,
or you can only be blonde
no,
to go
all the employees
there.
Will be blonde. Okay. Every single one will be blonde.
You can go.
I can go.
You can go.
But I really probably wouldn't want to anyway.
Well, it's going to be difficult. They're having delays in the construction. The blondes who were painting the buildings had to be treated for heat stroke in the tropical sun. They explained the paint can said, for best results, put on two coats. Thank you very much. Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924, or you can click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, and check out this week's Sandwich Monday post on our blog. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
Jason.
Hey, Jason, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I'm so glad to hear it. Where are you calling from?
Cleveland, Ohio.
Cleveland, Ohio. We got some Clevelanders here.
Thank you.
Who left to come to New York. How are things in Cleveland?
Cool.
Cool. I want you to tell, since we have some Clevelanders here, why it's great to be in Cleveland right now. What they're missing. Go.
Great Lakes Brewery beer.
There you go. Well, thanks so much, Jason. Welcome to our show. You're going to play the game in which you have to complete the limerick. Carl will start three of them for you, each related to news of this week. Your job, finish them. Do that two times out of three. You'll be a winner. Ready to go?
Yes.
Here's your first limerick.
Has the circus just come into town? In Brazil, it too wears the crown. And oversized shoes are making big news. Brazil has elected a...
clown.
Yes, indeed. There were elections this week in Brazil. The proud holder of the congressional seat from Sao Paulo is Francisco Everardo Oliveira Silva, the first circus clown to serve in Brazil's government. The first admitted circus clown to serve. He campaigned with the slogan, "It can't get any worse," and won. The Democrats in Washington seem to have taken notes of Mr. Silva's success. For example, earlier this week, Joe Biden slipped on a banana peel and squirted Benjamin Netanyahu with a bottle of seltzer. And then he heard about the clown. Here's your next limerick.
Though Neanderthals had a tough rind, in some ways they were quite refined. In their own clumsy fashion, they showed great compassion. Yes, cavemen were gentle and...
kind.
Right. Now, if you're like most people, when you think Neanderthal, you think dumb, club-wielding thug. But a surprising new study shows our heavy-jawed ancestors had a sensitive side.
Aww.
It's true. Neanderthals, it turns out, had tightly bonded communities. They cared for their sick. They gave tender hugs. The scientists add that Neanderthals were good listeners. That's what they say now. This, you know, it's like Neanderthal society. It's like, no, your arms aren't too long. Your knuckles in the ground, they make you seem grounded. Don't worry.
No, that dress doesn't make you look ape-like.
No. That brow ridge really brings out your eyes.
How would they know that?
It's like those studies, right? It doesn't.
They do a study.
No.
They did it of certain genetic suppositions based on brain structure. It's, you know, they just
but
know.
But
they
kindness.
Know.
How do you know kindness?
They found like a really old Hallmark card.
All right. Here's your last limerick, Jason.
My fingers go tappity tap. Now my notebook will close with a snap. I need a cool breeze on my smoking knees. My computer is singeing my...
lap.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen who own laptops, whatever you do, do not put them on top of your laps. Experts have discovered more and more cases of, quote, toasted skin syndrome.
Oh, God.
Laptops get hot, and when we sit with them in our laps for hours, they're effectively toasting our skin, which, unless you're a cast member on Jersey Shore, is an uncomfortable feeling. Experts say TSS is causing stinging rashes, permanent skin discoloration, and in rare cases, infertility, which, if you are a cast member on Jersey Shore, might not be such a bad thing. Carl, how did Jason do in our quiz?
Well, Jason had three correct answers, Peter, so Jason, you win our prize.
Well done, Jason.
Thank you. Hey, and can I tell all my friends now that I played Carnegie Hall?
Yeah, tell your friend you played Carnegie Hall.
Thank you.
Tell him you got an ovation. Give him an ovation. Ovation for Jason. That's for you, Jason.
Thank you, New York.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Tom Baudet and Roxanne Roberts both have 3 points. Charlie Pierce has 2.
All right. Charlie, you're in third place, so you'll be up first. Clock will start when you begin your first question. Fill in the blank. The White House denied reports it had prevented scientists from being frank about the blank in the Gulf.
The oil spill, the
right.
BP spill.
Although the U.S. apologized for last week's helicopter raid, authorities in Pakistan shut down the border crossing into blank.
Afghanistan.
Right. Phillies' Roy Halladay made history when he became only the second pitcher to throw a blank in the postseason.
A no-hitter.
Right. Baltimore Orioles second baseman Brian Roberts revealed that he missed the last week of the baseball season after he blanked.
After he fainted.
No, after he gave himself a concussion by hitting himself in the head with his own bat. To boost the green credentials of the White House, President Obama announced he's planning to add blanks to the roof.
Solar panels.
Right, this week Toshiba unveiled its new 3D TV, which you can watch without having to blank.
Without having to do turn it on.
No, without having to wear the funny 3D glasses. A high school in Rhode Island decided to pull out of a football game against a rival school when they blanked.
When they Evo Moralist the opposing team.
No,
repeatedly.
When they saw how big the other school's players were.
Oh, well, okay.
All it took was one look at Lawrence Academy's three front linemen who together weigh almost 1,000 pounds.
God.
And the St. George School players suddenly realized they had other plans, like living to see another day. Carl, how did Charlie do in our quiz?
Charlie had 4 correct answers for 8 more points. He now has 10 points, and Charlie has the lead.
All right. All right. We flipped a coin, and Roxanne has talked Tom into going second, so here we go, Tom. You're up next. Although she had to recuse herself from more than 20 cases, Elena Kagan took her seat on the blank.
Supreme Court.
Right. In spite of efforts to keep it away, toxic red sludge from a Hungarian factory reached the blank river on Thursday.
Blue Danube.
Right. Because of thousands of processing irregularities by mortgage lenders, numerous states called for a moratorium on blanks.
Foreclosure.
Right. In a new TV ad, Delaware GOP Senate candidate Christine O'Donnell tells viewers that despite what they've heard, she is not a blank.
A witch.
Right. A Wisconsin firefighter said rescuing a 9-year-old boy from inside a claw machine was made difficult by the fact the boy was, quote, blank.
A claw machine?
Yeah,
what
with
is
a coin-operated claw machine grabs the toys.
Because the boy was what? Holding on. He wouldn't get out.
Yeah, pretty much. He was really happy to be in there. He didn't want to leave. Saying, ack, for the last time, the long-running comic strip Blank ended with the announcement that the lead character is pregnant.
Ack. Who says ack?
Is that Bill the Cat?
Not Bill the Cat. Well, he does say ack, but this was Kathy. Kathy was pregnant and ended her run. Ack! A Florida man said that the cocaine discovered by police wasn't his, even though they found it blank.
Like in his hands.
No, in his buttocks. When a bag of cocaine...
Which is even worse.
When a bag of cocaine was found there by the police, Raymond Stanley Roberts was just as surprised as anyone because he swore to police it was not his, unlike the bag of marijuana that fell out with it, which was totally his, he admitted. Yeah, they find it in his
bottle. Who else would want it?
I know. Carl, how did Tom do in our quiz?
Tom had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 13 points, and Tom has taken the lead.
Very well done. So.
Not enough.
When Roxanne's on a roll and wearing a nice dress, how many does Roxanne need to win?
5 to tie, 6 to win outright.
Now you can do this, Roxanne. Here we go. This is for the game. On Tuesday, a judge handed down a sentence of life in prison to the man who attempted to bomb blank.
Times Square.
Right. In a massive corruption takedown, the FBI arrested 133 police officers and public officials in blank.
Puerto Rico.
Right. This week, the White House denied reports that it was planning a 2012 ticket of Obama and blank.
Secretary of State Clinton.
Right. After he was fired for anti-Semitic comments, The Daily Show ran a piece mocking former CNN anchor blank.
Rick Sanchez.
Right. Tesla Motors is planning to sell electric cars across the country, but one drawback is that if the car breaks down, you have to blank.
You have to wind it up.
No, you have to pay to fly a mechanic in from California to fix it. In their list of the world's 100 most powerful women, Forbes gave the top spot to blank.
First Lady Michelle Obama.
Yes, this week Donald Trump announced that he is absolutely thinking about running for blank.
President.
Right, a Florida woman whose home was burglarized was able to identify the suspect in a photo because he was blank.
Because he left a picture of himself at the crime scene.
No, because he was holding her Cheez-Its. No two boxes of Cheez-Its are alike to Cheez-It lovers. So the guy who robbed Ricky Brower's Jacksonville home made a big mistake in taking her brand new box of Cheez-Its. Luckily for her, her next door neighbor snapped a photo of the thief as he made his escape. And Bowers only had to take one look at the photo before saying, quote, "Those are my Cheez-Its." And justice was done. Carl, did Roxanne do well enough to win?
She needed 6 answers to win, and she had 6
there
correct
you go.
Answers. So with
15, hold her down.
So with 15 points, Roxanne Roberts is this week's champion.
Very well done, Roxanne. In just a minute, we'll ask our panelists to predict who will be the next pair to co-host on CNN. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Subaru, where all vehicles are built in zero landfill plants. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. The Annie E. Casey Foundation, promoting lifelong family connections for children and youth in foster care, on the web at aecf.org, and the Wall Street Journal Weekend, offering four sections of ideas and information available at newsstands every Saturday. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with the Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug wouldn't even wear a suit at Carnegie Hall. Berman, executive producer. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Blythe Haga. Our web guru, Beth Novi. Special thanks to Rachel Davis and the fabulous crew here at Carnegie Hall. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Waltrover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Michael Danforth. Now, panel, who will CNN pair up next to win the ratings war? Charlie Pierce.
Christine O'Donnell and Rahm Emanuel and special guest Sharon Angle in the news special, Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered.
Roxanne Roberts.
Bristol Palin and Lindsay Lohan debate youth issues on Girls Gone Mild.
And Tom Baudet.
George W. Bush and Al Gore discuss the issues of today tonight at 8. Hang your chat on Bush v. Gore.
Well, if CNN does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Tom Baudet, Roxanne Roberts, and Charlie Pierce sitting right there. Thanks also to Chris Bannon, Abby Lovinger, everyone at WNYC New York. Thanks to our fabulous audience that is filling Carnegie Hall, the Paramount stage. Thanks to all of you out there in America for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you all next week. This is NPR.